We have a different crew this week because it is Anna has joined us again.
Yes, in yes. celebration of the full moon.
Yes. Oh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Where's Werewolf Week?
Yeah, it's...
It actually sort of is Werewolf
Isn't it Werewolf Awareness Day? It was Werewolf Awareness Day, right?
Werewolf Awareness Day was yesterday.
Oh, okay, good. Yeah. I mean, you should always be aware of werewolves.
Yes. A werewolf.
A werewolf. Yes.
Yeah.
Being a werewolf, not an... being a woke wolf, not an asleep wolf.
Yeah.
But yes, Anna's joining us for the day while Nick chills outside.
No. Tragically... In my werewolf rampage, I accidentally took Nick out.
Oh.
So I'm actually on the podcast permanently now.
I hope you hung on to his husk so that we can prop it up for the occasional guest podcast.
Yes, for Weekend at the Rogues Cast. Yes.
Whenever you hear Nick from now on, know that it is Zombie Nick.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm busy typing all the various possibilities
for the title of the episode.
Title that we've already run across. So
it got weird fast.
It did get weird fast.
We got a cool week of comics.
Yeah.
We're going to kind of.
Week.
I think we're going to do a sort of tight podcast because we may be a little short on time to do topics.
Yep,
but
it was busy today, plus we have comics to read.
We'll see.
But first of all, Store News, want to mention we got a new Kickstarter thing in the RPG Squeeze, which are little blind boxes of.
What do you call those?
Stress
balls.
Stress balls, basically.
Yeah.
And there's like there's various colors of Beholder, and then there's one that has, in addition to Beholders, it's got Mimics and Gelatinous Cubes.
The Gelatinous Cube is amazing. Yeah. Like, you can see the imprint of like stuff like trying to get out of a cube.
Yeah.
Like,
little skeletons
and
things.
It's gross, but also adorable.
Yeah. And they're different. You get blind colors, and I think you don't know if you're getting a Beholder, a Mimic, or a Gelatinous Cube. But you can, if you definitely want to be guaranteed a Beholder, get the Beholder set.
Yep.
Yeah.
So you can buy one of each. We have unpainted versions. You can squeeze them and see what they feel like.
And give them a test grip.
Give them a test grip.
It seems like it'd be perfect for the GM or player in your life who you want to like a little gift, extra gift for.
The GM's needed. GMs are going to be
frustrated. Yeah, I was going to say. The first time you plan a puzzle that you think is simple enough for second graders and your players try to murder it... That's what your squeeze ball's
the
for.
The first time your player spent 3 hours opening a door that isn't even locked.
Yeah.
That happened in my campaign, by the way. I was one of the players.
You can use, though, a stress ball without being stressed. It's just enjoyable. It's tactically pleasant.
Oh.
Tactilely pleasant.
Tactically pleasant also is a thing we should definitely call...
I think...
Tactically pleasant.
Tactically pleasant is a good thing.
Is the military operation that I'm doing that's really just to kind of put people in a good mood.
It's just, you run through town with guns saying, smile or else!
See, I actually thought Tactically Pleasant was the subtitle to the new Cable ongoing.
Is that because he has... I don't know,
nope.
tactile kinesis or whatever he has.
No, because he's all like wearing like the tactical. Oh man, I feel like explaining this joke makes it way less fun.
That's all right. I was lost.
You're killing me, Dave.
The other thing we got is the Magic the Gathering Strixhaven, which was a bit limited, but we have draft boosters coming in.
Yeah,
and we still have I think everything but commander boosters. Right,
people have been pretty excited to pick that one up. It has a neat.
It's a cool
really
theme.
Delightful,
it's
actually.
Schools. It's different schools.
A magic school.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's like a bear who teaches people stuff, which
what?
I assume is like a bear class. They teach
what?
A bear class.
Yep.
A bear.
Yep.
Show me the card at some point.
I thought I did.
Oh, show it again.
Yeah, it's like a handsome like bear person.
Is he like in a suit?
He's in a suit with like glasses and like little gray bits in his face because he's like tenured.
Ah,
he's a tenured bear professor.
Excellent. This is so good. People ought to pick up the set for that.
I know.
Alone.
It's literally like some of the most adorable stuff.
Goodness.
I spent the last minute trying to think of a good bear teaching pun and couldn't come up with one. Anyway, on to other news.
Yep.
We've got another bit of casting news from Marvel. Apparently, Emilia Clarke, the Khaleesi, has been cast in Marvel's Secret Invasion. For what role? We don't know.
She's playing
Skrull
Khaleesi.
Interesting, Skrull Khaleesi. Now, I do wonder, the Secret Invasion comics, which we know the comics don't often
have
that
much... She
should
be the Shield agent in charge of rooting out Skrulls.
I was wondering if she'd be the Skrull Queen. Because
she was a thing.
Remember the Secret Invasion, the Skrull Queen was like the leader of the faction that was in charge. And I mean, it would be a bit... If she's getting typecast as Queens, that's unfortunate for her, I guess. But
it could be kind of fun, though.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're going to get typecast as something, rather a queen than, like, I don't know, like a smelly garbage man.
That's true. Yeah.
It's one or the other.
Those roles all go to Mel Gibson. And they're not rolls so much as his life.
What's the actress's name?
Really deep into method acting.
Yeah, Mel Gibson's a method actor. He plays a smelly garbage man like nobody else.
There's speculation already about the Skrull stuff, including for those of you who watch Falcon and Winter Soldier.
No, we shouldn't say that.
I'm not going to say it, but there is speculation that a character on there could have been doing something for Skrull-y reasons.
They could all be Skrulls. What if everyone's a Skrull? What if I'm a Skrull?
I don't... What?
Are you a Skrull?
Get him!
No.
If you're a Skrull, you have to say.
Yeah, that's right.
I don't think that's how that works.
I think that's literally how it works.
That sounds like Kree-entrapment
yes.
to me.
Yeah, if you're a Kree, you have to tell me.
So for those who don't know, the Skrull or Secret Invasion, it was a storyline from the comics, and it's going to be a TV miniseries
TV
like
miniseries,
all the rest of these.
Yeah.
Six episodes or something like that.
Something like that. They're also doing Armor Wars.
That's nuts.
There'll not be Skrulls in that one. Well, maybe there will. I don't know.
Well, so...
Isn't Tony dead?
But it's going to be Rhodey's show. The Rhodey Shoddy.
This ain't his first Rhodey show.
I mean, actually... so many titles. The cool thing about Armor Wars in the comics, it was all about like other people using Tony's technology and trying to stop it. It'd be interesting if basically it's posthumously Stark Tech got out in the wild, and then Rhodey is trying to stop other people from using it for nefarious means.
I have to imagine that Stark Tech would not be as moral as Tony was becoming or trying to become in keeping his stuff from being used as in warfare.
Right. Well, I mean, he gave all his arsenal over to a 16-year-old kid and you don't know what to do with it.
It's in his backstory.
He gave his entire company to Peter?
I mean, he gave all his control of his technology stuff. Like, remember, he had his drones and his satellites and
that
stuff.
But
He didn't, like, will the company to Peter.
No, but it was like all the Stark Tech weaponry and stuff went to him.
There was something like that, yeah.
That's
oh my
Mysterio
god. Look, I mean, I know that I am not, like... I know that I am not the biggest fan of Tony Stark, but this seems like a bonehead move even for Tony.
Look, it was probably something he did while he was dying in space. He's like, who should I give all the tech to? How about the kid? Sure, I like the kid.
Yeah. Oxygen-starved Tony.
Yeah, or maybe
he forgot that he was dead at that point.
Like, yeah, I was going to say, or drunk Tony even. Like, he's like, Pepper, it's going to be real funny if
the man
is
an alcoholic. Leave him alone.
Just give the nukes to the 16-year-old. It's fine.
You know, what that's going to happen is that in Spider-Man, what's the next one called? Blank from Home?
No Way Home.
In Spider-Man No Way Home, invaders are going to show up on Earth, and Spider-Man is just going to be like, deploy all Stark Tech and destroy them.
Yep.
And it's just going to, like, he's going to wipe them out with that.
Yep.
Be like, this is a new mode for Spider-Man.
Yes. Spider-Man now has an army of kill robots.
I don't like that.
It's not the Spidey I grew up with, but I liked how they did portray it.
And then, of course, there'll be a spin-off comic, Amazing Spider-Man and his Killbots. And his amazing friend, Killbots.
The friendly neighborhood Killbots.
His friends are Iceman, Firestar, and 10 million killer drones.
We really don't need Firestar and Iceman at this point, but they're here.
No, they're here to hang out. It's
Firestar, Iceman, Miss Lion... And 100,000 killbots.
Peter has brought order to the world.
Yes.
Or else.
And this is what, I guess, sets the stage for Armor Wars?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Rhodey's like, maybe the 16-year-old shouldn't have nukes.
Maybe we should take killbots away from the kid.
Yeah, he's still covering Tony's ass all these years later. But I'm so Don Cheadle's going to get the headline, though?
Yeah, that's cool.
I always like Don Cheadle.
That's good.
I agree.
I like Don Cheadle.
If you don't like him, he'll turn you into a tree.
That's true.
Look it up. It's an old internet bit, y'all.
By the way, speaking of Don Cheadle, much I love Don Cheadle. What's his name? The guy who played the original Rhodey must be should be smacking his head for the negotiations he made.
Was he a guy who was kind of a teabag?
Terrence Howard's kind of a teabag, and I believe he was like, I didn't make enough money. I want to renegotiate my contract. And like, that's fine. We'll bring somebody else in. And now it's like, Rhodey's been in like 5 movies. He's about to headline his own series. So maybe that was dumb.
Maybe, but I do get the notion, like, I don't want to give the studio all the power here. Like, he might have deserved some money, too, and just he just overplayed his hand because he didn't have the clout yet.
Yeah, I was going to say, I also feel like, almost assuredly, it must have been more expensive to pay Don Cheadle for all of these movies.
Yeah, probably.
Isn't Don Cheadle a bigger name?
He's a pretty big name.
Well, that's the thing, I think...
Just like a spiteful
move. That's what
move.
I think. I think Terrence Howard asked for, like, more than Don Cheadle money. And I'm like, man, you ain't Don Cheadle.
That's fair.
But anyway, also, this is kind of like a, it's kind of like the Mark Ruffalo Ed Norton thing. Some people are like, Ed Norton would have been a better Hulk. And I'm like, no, I'm glad he's gone. I'm glad his ego got the better of him.
Yeah.
No, he would have been a better Hulk.
I think I probably would have liked him, but I do like chill Stoner.
I like
Banner.
Stoner Hulk.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. He was a good fit for the movies, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Back to comics, because Tom Taylor, our beloved Tom Taylor,
yep,
is taking over Superman.
Sweet
at DC
juggling
comics.
Circus man, yep, of my heart.
He is that probably deserves an explanation.
No,
I'm gonna I have to contextualize it for the people. Tom Taylor was interviewed on the X-Men podcast you listened to.
Yeah, and Miles explained the X-Men.
Yeah. He it was at the time he had been writing All New Wolverine and X-Men Red. And it turns out he has led a storied life in the land of Down Under.
Yeah, it was a fairly normal interview until like the last 5 minutes when he drops like, yeah, I was a juggling street performer who would like dance and juggle knives while
fire
my
eater
wife laid down in, like, beneath my knives. And I'm just listening to it like, oh my god, what?
And now he's writing Superman.
Yep.
Now he's writing Superman.
So, or should I say Superboy?
No, he's Superman. So he is writing Superman, Son of Kal-El, because one of the things they did in Future State was this reveal that Superman was thought to be dead, but in fact he is off fighting gladiators on War World.
And right. This is in like 10, 15 years in the future?
Apparently not. Apparently it was like 1 year in the future because they're doing it now.
Oh.
So basically this is... Superman, Kal-El, or what's his name?
John Kent
is taking over Superman because his son, he either thinks his dad is gone, or he knows his dad is off on Warworld or something like that.
Now, Superman, who has been in action in Superman comics lately, working with his son.
Yeah, yeah.
But are they going to kind of jump to the thing where Superman is gone, son Superman takes over?
So this list says there's a hole in Legion's history that prevents John from knowing exactly when it will happen, but all signs point to it being very soon.
Interesting.
So
I like Tom Taylor. I like Superman. I don't know if I wanted to see him writing a book about baby Superman.
Well, he'll be writing adult baby Superman.
I guess like John, like what is he, 18, 20? Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
Yeah. I mean, but also like, I think that if there's a book to put Tom Taylor on, it's to like really flesh out and give a personality to your younger legacy hero.
Yeah.
That's like his shtick, right?
That's his thing, yeah.
Like he's great at that.
He did that with Laura over on Wolverine. Yeah. He'd be a good guy now they brought Connor Hawk back, by the way, spoilers. they should have him write Connor Hawk. He'd be great at writing Connor Hawk.
I think that would be a good fit for him.
And also,
as you pointed out,
my dream of him writing Green Arrow.
He did do, speaking of Green Arrow, when he was writing the alternate timeline of the Injustice comics, mm-hmm, really good.
Yep.
He did do some good work. Oh, no, wait, you know what? Actually, I didn't mean to do that. I was talking about the alternate timeline of the deceased universe.
Yep. Yes.
He did some good stuff with Jonathan Kent and Damian Wayne and stuff like that, kind of as they had grown up a bit. So,
yeah.
So, I will give it the time of day. I kind of wish he was writing Clark, though, for me.
Yeah, what's interesting is Clark is still in Action Comics. Phil Kenny Johnson, who wrote the Future State stuff,
mm-hmm,
he is doing...
He's just being a deadbeat dad hiding out from his kid.
No, Superman is... I guess Superman is still around in Tom Taylor's Superman. Like, he doesn't know when, but at some point, he's going to disappear. So there are two Supermen, basically.
Eh,
so basically, Superman is trying to free the prisoners of War World, and he's going to, like, Atlantis, all these people to sort of gather... allies. And there's also a miniseries written by Grant Morrison, Superman and the Authority, which is basically him putting together a new authority to take out War World, to go and rescue them. And the members of the Authority, it's Manchester Black, Midnighter, Apollo, Enchantress,
nice,
Natasha Irons, and new versions of Light Ray and OMAC.
Well,
Grant Morrison, you crazy madman person.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty delighted that Midnighter and Apollo are going to be in a story with Superman.
Yeah.
Like, do you think that Superman is just going to watch them, like, interact with one another and be like, oh, God, I hope this doesn't awaken something in me?
Superman's not that way.
Superman and Lois swing changed my mind.
I mean, that's possible. That's quite possible.
Also, Tom King is doing an 8-issue Supergirl miniseries. And, yeah, I guess that's...
I bet Livewire, probably with Livewire.
Yeah, for sure.
I think, oh, man, I feel like Lois and Livewire would, like, really, really get along.
I'm just saying Mixoplink.
Also, I'm just saying, I've seen the way Lois and Renee Montoya look at one another,
in
like,
the Lois
lustily
comic.
Over the glow of cigarettes in
yes.
Greg Rucka's comic. I know how he likes his lesbians.
It's true. Greg Rucka loves lesbians more than anyone else.
That's probably true.
True. He actually won the award for it.
I'd like to put my name in that hat, but I think I'm probably going to have to pass
less
it
than
to
Rucka.
Rucka.
It's less than Rucka.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
He went through the labors. He's put out a lot of comics.
The lesbian labors of Greg Rucka.
What were we talking about?
I can't believe it matters. We were talking about Superman and Baby Superman and Weird Authority.
I know. I was going to say, Grant Morrison, that's pretty notable, too, that he's, you know, he had done the Green Lantern thing, but I kind of thought he was sort of done with DC for a bit.
Yeah.
And suddenly he's writing this book with a bunch of weirdos like the Seven Soldiers of Victory.
Grant Morrison can never quit DC.
Do you think that maybe Grant Morrison wanted to quit DC because he didn't like the direction that DC was going, but
then
now
DiDio
is not, like, hanging out anymore?
It certainly feels more amenable right now.
Yeah, well, now people are like, all right, Grant, you can go do your weird shit and it'll be fine.
Although I think DiDio was, like, the person to whom he cut the deal for Green Lantern. I remember.
Sure.
I actually heard DiDio talk about that.
I believe that Grant Morrison can get along with anyone for a limited time. I mean, he and Miller were good friends for a while.
Before he broke his heart.
Before Mark Miller broke Grant Morrison's heart.
Yeah.
And we'll never forgive him.
Before he
it's
turned.
True. Now we decided
he was like, Anakin, you were supposed to be the chosen one to Miller.
Yeah. All right. Leaving off from DC. So, there's a trailer for The Conjuring Devil Made Me Do It,
yep.
Which is a set in the 80s. It's the Warrens.
The third Conjuring movie,
yep,
right?
Yep.
Have you watched
the Conjuring movies?
I haven't.
They're scary.
You're welcome to spoil them for me,
They're scary and good. You should watch them.
James Wan, the
I do like scary and also
guy.
Good. But I also like scary and bad, so
did you ever watch, have you ever
me.
Watched Insidious, which was also directed by James Wan? Had the scary red-faced demon.
I think I watched Insidious.
All right. These names do all start to blur.
There's a scary red-faced demon in Insidious and in Conjuring?
The demon is in Insidious. I don't remember actually.
There's a weird red-faced thing behind him. Is that Insidious? And not, am I mixing up the Conjuring?
Patrick, what's his name,
oh,
is
he's
in both. Yeah,
right.
James Wan likes working with this guy. He was also Ocean Master in Aquaman.
Was there a red-faced demon in Aquaman?
Yes.
Did James
and that
Wan
red-faced demon
Aquaman?
Was alcoholism. no.
That's the
what was your question?
Demon.
I'm sorry.
Did James Wan also direct Aquaman?
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
He gets around. That was like his kind of. I don't know if it's his first big non-horror thing. He produced some Fast and Furious stuff. Did he direct any of them?
He might have directed one. I don't remember.
If he did, it was like one of the last few. But anyway, he's a talented director who does kind of do the kind of popcorn jump scare movies.
Yeah.
But I think there's usually kind of like more a stronger story and some character, you know, arcs and growth and stuff in it. They're not deep horror movies, but they have more going on than many. And I think they're really the best kind of popcorn.
I did go
horror.
All in on the Insidious series because it was also done by Leigh Whannell, who did Upgrade.
Yep.
And
Invisible Man.
And Invisible Man. Which
yeah,
is, which are both great.
He is a notable name to keep up with
so,
now.
So I did jump in on Insidious, but Conjuring was my first encounter with, like, James Wan. And it's based on this couple that did paranormal investigations in real life, which is unfortunate.
They're kind of broadly, I think, known to be kind of hucksters who were good at peddling themselves, selling themselves. But they were involved in things like the Amityville House, the Annabelle doll and stuff like that were part of their investigations. And so they've done these highly fictionalized scary movies based on their investigations, and now they're doing sort of in the 80s era, I think, Satanic Panic.
Satanic Panic, kid being possessed kind of thing.
Yeah.
Evil Waterbed.
I did see that.
There's a disturbing sequence when somebody is lying on a waterbed and you see, like, this
face,
like, this ghoulish face and under the thing.
You want to know how to make it less scary?
No.
It's a gelatinous cube. That's what
That's
it is.
Not less scary.
Yeah,
those
it is.
Things will eat you.
I have it on good authority that they're very cute and squishable, especially if you're stressed.
Yes, but not if you're on the inside.
I played in a D&D game once where, gelatinous cubes, like, do they try and pull you in, like, with, like, like little pseudopods come out
pseudopods.
And tug you in?
Yeah.
Basically, we had, like, three or four people. We were all badly injured, and it kept on pulling somebody in, and that person, you start to suffocate and die.
Yeah.
And then, like, that person would, like, just manage to get out, and somebody else would get pulled in.
Yeah.
And it was actually just extremely frustrating. Like, for, like, 20, 30 minutes, we're fighting this stupid cube, and, like, we can't get a leg up on it because someone is in it at all times. And I guess to, like, do heavy damage to it, you would hurt the person inside, too.
This is like the gelatinous cube of Sisyphus.
I guess so.
Yeah. Gelatinous cube of Sisyphus.
Except instead of always pushing it up a hill, you're just always being dragged in by pseudopods. But it's essentially the same concept.
Yeah.
I think that's probably true.
It was in one of the lost myths of Greece.
Yeah, so they don't talk about that one as much, the gelatinous cube.
But that's where Gary Gygax got it from.
It is true.
When Zeus sent Perseus down to get something out of a gelatinous cube.
And the owlbear, of course, is a Norse creature.
Right.
Yeah. Thor wrestled one.
That's cool. I'd read that story. I'd read that story right now.
So anyway, the country looks fun. I think, Dave, you were maybe not as sold on this.
The director is the person who directed one of the crappy spinoff ones.
Oh.
What was it? Not the one with the nun.
So this is not James Wan?
No.
Oh.
No, and in fact, I thought actually the trailer was good.
Yeah.
I thought the trailer was quite good, but they directed... Oh, man, it was... Which spinoff was it? Oh, no, they directed the Curse of La Llorona.
Yeah, which I believe people did not like.
And I heard that was just a terrible jump scare movie.
Okay.
So maybe he got his act together. Maybe the material will inspire him. Maybe working with Patrick Wilson will make everything better. I don't know, but I'm waiting for reviews on it.
That's fair. I was excited about this, but, I mean, also it's going to be on HBO Max, so I don't have to go to a theater to see it.
Yeah.
I can watch it just like I watch Mortal Kombat, which means if it's terrible, I'll turn it off halfway through.
Yeah.
I've seen a few of the spin-offs of the Insidious or Conjuring... I guess the Conjuring movies...
All the Insidious ones are good.
What? No.
Yeah.
Oh, all the Insidious movies themselves are good, but the one about the nun or whatever...
I thought that was the Conjuring.
Nunsidious, yeah.
Yeah.
Is that one was... Okay, I guess so.
Nunsidious is Darth Sidious' anarchy band name.
All the Insidious movies are just called Insidious.
Yes.
But yeah, The Conjuring has the Bad Nun one, the Bad Annabelle, two Bad Annabelle ones.
So The Conjuring spinoffs are the problem.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But anyway, I'm kind of looking forward to it.
We'll
but
see.
Also, DC is launching a horror comics line.
Didn't they already do that?
Yeah, their third or fourth one.
Yeah.
Well, that one seemed to be, you're talking about the Hill House ones?
Yeah.
That Joe Hill did? That was it seems like it was a finite curated line. You know,
yeah,
he's like, I will oversee five miniseries,
yeah.
And then I'm done for the day. And honestly, I like that. I don't want to be reading stories that are on issue 72 in a few years.
But I mean, all this stuff feels like it could have been in the Vertigo if they hadn't killed the Vertigo imprint.
Yeah, that seems like a weird move.
I think that's a sad loss, the Vertigo loss, but I would rather have these probably stand on their own and not have to be tied to Vertigo stuff.
So they're putting out something called The Conjuring the Lover, which is a spinoff from... it's co-written by the screenwriter of Conjuring 2 and Conjuring Devil Made Me Do It.
Okay.
The fact there's the same screenwriter in Conjuring 2 makes me feel a little bit better about it.
Conjuring 2 was quite good.
Yeah. And New York Times bestselling author Rex Ogle, great name.
That is a great
wrote
name.
Death of Wolverine, Life After Logan, and some Teen Titans. Art is by Gary Brown, who did Baby Teeth, which is a pretty good solid horror book.
Yeah,
yeah.
Cover by Bill Sienkiewicz.
Oh, that's
it's a solid team.
They an excellent
they've,
cover.
They've put together a team.
So it expands the tragic story of Jessica, a college freshman returning to campus after winter break, bringing with her the anxieties of last semester's poor grades, the awkwardness of facing a boy she wishes she'd never slept with, and an undeniably unnerving feeling of being watched.
That sounds like a creepy start. I'm down for that.
So it is it's apparently a tale exploring the frightening origin of one of the items from the Warren's haunted artifact room.
Right, and
those are backup stories.
What's that?
So the main story is the lover. The backup stories are going to be various artifacts, and the first one is written by Scott Snyder with art by Dennis Cohen.
Right. That was actually one of the only Conjuring spinoff that I liked was one that was about... I actually don't remember what this one was called. It was the one that was about the artifact room, and they're all gone for the weekend, and they're like, their daughter, who's home alone, is there when something... Sure, her friends come and stay over, and they're like, oh, let's go down and look in your creepy parents' artifact room.
I think that is called The Conjuring Scary Room Full of Things.
Yes, that's the one.
Yeah.
Wow, it is.
Was that... Oh, you know what? I think that actually could have been, Annabelle Origins or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
They tagged her name on it, and, it actually ended up being good because it wasn't mostly about her.
Maybe. Yeah.
I don't know. I'm forgetting stuff. But that one actually was all right.
So this is going to be... Apparently they're going to use this to anchor a new horror line, but there's no more indication about what the other horror series will be.
No, any indication if it's a shared universe with the Conjuring-verse?
I don't think so. It sounds like it's going to be new... Okay, I guess it may be new tie-ins for upcoming horror movies. It may all be horror movie-themed, But it could be new stories. We'll see. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, DC did find, I guess, like... They did all those, like, horror movie homage covers. Like,
oh, yeah, right, during
Deceased. Deceased and stuff. I don't know, I wouldn't be surprised if, sort of, like, they did end up going, sort of, doing horror movie tie-ins.
It's cool if they actually did some stuff.
How many books do you guys think Tom Taylor can reasonably write in a month?
So, having listened to that Tom Taylor interview, I think that so long as he likes what he is writing, he could... write a nigh-infinite amount of books.
Because we've seen that be a problem with creators who are great, and then they start writing too many books, and they become terrible.
Yeah, I think that Tom Taylor is too afraid of dropping the knives that he's juggling to be bad at writing.
So what you're saying is we need Bendis to juggle knives to get better as a writer.
Or not get better
or
as a writer.
Either way, the knives will take care of things.
Either way, Doom wins. We also saw a trailer for the, not so much, this looks like more a horror comedy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Werewolves Within, which is based on a video game.
Is it?
It said it's an Ubisoft video game, which I think has got to be based on the, like, werewolf deduction, like, social game that everybody's played.
I can see that. Although they did, there was not like a deductive element of this trailer.
But there was, because they're all, it's like, it's a small town and they don't know who the werewolf is.
Yeah.
Oh, is that the?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was sort of the.
What's the movie called?
Werewolves Within.
Huh.
But yeah, it seemed very much like The Dead Don't Die.
That's
like
quirky, but
maybe
not
quite as weird.
Not quite as weird, but yeah, like, well, I mean, I don't know if it's
quite as weird. Was that Jim Jarmusch?
It's not Jim Jarmusch directing. It can't possibly be as weird.
All right, you win. I don't think that Tilda Swinton's going to get pulled up in a spaceship and flown away.
If she did.
Do you think they will listen to the movie's own theme song on the radio and note that it's the theme song to the movie in the movie?
Well, all right, fine.
Will there be a Scottish katana-wearing alien, katana-wielding alien, who fights the zombies?
So, but the trailer...
Or the werewolves.
I hope.
Yeah, of course.
That's my fondest
hope. You always
hope
for it.
For literally every movie.
Yeah.
The trailer looked fun.
It did.
I don't have any, like, strong thoughts on it.
I recognize a lot of the actors from various comedies and stuff, TV comedies and stuff, and I liked all of them, so.
I do have one strong thought.
Yeah?
I want the werewolves to be happy.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they can be happy if they're gonna murder townsfolk. And a very adorable dog.
What if that's what makes werewolves happy?
Well, I want them to be happy, but I sort of don't think that happiness can be zero-sum. I feel like if your happiness makes other people extremely unhappy or extremely dead, then maybe you should pursue the thing that makes you second most happy.
This is a good philosophy in general. However, let me put this: what if the townspeople are just terrible people?
Then werewolves can just go ham.
Yeah.
Just go ham.
There are some towns that werewolves could take out.
Yeah,
and be okay.
Yeah, I think that's
some,
probably true.
There are some places I would like to unleash werewolves.
Yeah. There are some places I would like to unleash werewolves.
That should be
God,
the title.
That's just a fucking mood is
that
what
should
that
be
is.
A title of a story there.
That sounds like a Boom book that James Tynion will be writing soon.
That's true. It does sound like a Boom title, doesn't it?
Something is killing the children. There are some places I'd like to unleash werewolves.
Yeah.
The town upon which werewolves have been released.
In fact, I'm going to write that now. I'm pitching it to Boom.
Yeah.
It's fine.
They'll buy it. The title has like eight letters in it,
yeah.
Or eight words in it. Boom will buy it.
Yeah.
So we know because of stuff like Death Note that people have a hunger for stories in which people utilize supernatural stuff to get revenge.
By the way, that book we all liked from last week, The Many Deaths of Layla Starr.
Oh, yeah.
That's another multiple title.
Yeah, it really is. It's enormous.
They are leaning into their strength. People seem to be liking that book, by the way.
It's
anybody
true.
Who's tried it on our recommendation has liked it.
We all
so
liked it.
Do
more
we
people,
still have more left?
Yes.
I think so.
Oh,
what's
man,
the name
cool.
of it again?
The Many Deaths of Layla Starr.
Yeah,
it's
read that,
so
y'all.
Good.
It is really good. We all liked it.
It's neat. What else
yeah,
we
a,
got?
It's a rare. Everybody liked it. And then finally, without spoiling that Captain America, that Winter Soldier Falcon thing ended this week.
Yes.
I guess there's a bit of a spoiler in there if you didn't already know, but they are doing a Captain America 4 movie.
Right.
Is that really a spoiler? I thought it was inevitable.
I mean, we probably should have known. But if you haven't watched Falcon and Winter Soldier and you're like, wow, I wonder who becomes Captain America, I'm sorry that you probably know now.
Well, I mean, like, someone becomes Captain
That's
America.
That's true, someone does.
There are a lot of someones who could.
Yep. Oh, actually,
It's like The Bachelor, but for Captain America.
Captain Bachelor. The Shield.
What's the line in National Treasure? Somebody's got to go to jail.
I have a text chain with my TV reviewing people,
mm-hmm.
and one of them posted a, wow, I can't believe Carly became Captain America at the end. And someone else posted, did you just spoil it for him? I'd be so mad. And he's like, no, I'm totally kidding.
Man, I kind of think that that would have been a super interesting move.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean...
I don't even like when people do those joking ones.
Yeah.
Because it means that it eliminates whatever vague possibility, not that that could happen, but that something close to it might happen.
I wouldn't have made that joke either.
Yeah. Anyway, isn't the director of the show doing the next Cap movie?
So it's the head writer and creator, Malcolm Spellman, along with Dylan Musson, who's the staff writer who wrote the fifth episode, The Truth, which is probably the strongest episode of the series.
I think that's probably true.
So they are writing it. No directors attached. We don't know if Chris Evans is going to be in it, but maybe that's what they were bringing him back for.
Yeah.
In some way. But I would like to see him actually...
Yeah.
I would like to see him like be able to not just hand off to Sam, but like to be able to say, you know, good job, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would
Carly,
like that.
Or Bucky, or whoever it is in the costume. Who knows? Or,
what if he trains with him?
Or Sharon.
And... the new Cap, whoever he may be,
yes.
or she,
yes, or they,
is practicing and throws the shield, and Steve tries to catch it, and he's just a withered old man now. No, I wasn't going to say something so horrible as decapitated. I was just going to say he crumples crumples in a heap of broken bones.
Yeah, what if
that's worse?
No,
I think.
What if, no, because see, in mine, he is decapitated, which works on two levels.
All right. I'll allow it.
All right, well, I'm going to go get the sword down from the wall. You guys have a couple minutes to start running.
That also could be a title of a boob book.
I'm going to get the sword down.
No, you guys have a couple minutes to start running.
That's actually a good title. I like it.
Actually.
Anyway.
Boom, listen to this podcast.
By the way, I just want to put this out. The person who's co-writing this, the credited writer of the fifth episode, Truth, who's in the writer's room, obviously, his previous credit was on Iron Sky, The Coming Race, the sequel to the Nazis on the Moon thriller.
What the fuck?
Wow.
Yeah. So, I don't know if you guys saw Iron Sky, but it was delightful.
I didn't. Oh, what is that?
Do you mean that sincerely?
It was super fun. It's tongue-in-cheek.
Right.
Like, I believe Hitler has a dinosaur. Like, it's
Kung Fury-ish?
It's Kung Fury-ish, but better.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, does he
That's
die
a compliment.
In the end?
Rainey throws that kind of compliment around all the time. Yeah. Kung Fury-ish, but better.
Yeah. It's serious. I described everything. That's how I described my lunch.
How was The Irishman?
Oh, Kung Fury, but better.
Kung Fury, but worse.
Kung Fury, but longer and boring. That's how I would describe The Irishman, actually.
The drier Kung Fury.
The drier Kung Fury.
Kung Fury played straight. Don't like.
That's actually the new Mortal Kombat.
oh, that's real bad. What a shitty thing to say about a movie.
Mortal Kombat deserves it.
Man.
All right, that's all the news we've got. We're going to take a break, and then we'll be back talking about comics for the week. We're talking comics for the week of Wednesday, April 28th, and it's a good week to close out the month.
Do you know what's been continually funny about these last several weeks is that how many DC books you're reading, Randy, and enthused for?
DC's been dead to me for a decade at least, more than that.
I think we are only speculating.
Yeah, we can't know.
It does really seem like since DiDio left and Jim Lee is still...
He's still involved in
there. Still involved.
But Bob Harris is gone.
Bob
right?
Harris is gone. Mm-hmm. And then who's the new lady?
Marie Javins, who was great at Marvel.
Marie Javins. What's her actual
title? She's editor-in-chief.
Editor-in-chief.
Yeah.
That seems like that's when all the new titles started hitting a few months later. Yep. I noticed that the cheesy cover captions where they had their little goofy Silver Age word balloons.
Everything.
All gone.
Yep.
Yeah.
And now they just have great art.
Yep.
And there's this strange new swell of enthusiasm.
Yeah. We can't know. We don't know. We're not privy to all the behind the scenes, the sausage making, and all that. But I can say that when Dan DiDio came to DC, things got measurably worse and continued to get worse. And the minute he left, things got better.
Right. He walks in and suddenly Identity Crisis happens.
Yep.
He walks out and suddenly you're reading 10 books.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's not that I didn't start reading it because Dan DiDio was gone, but I didn't notice his absence.
No.
So this week is a book that I think the entire staff, except for Max, who has not read it yet, but who will like it, get on board or not,
is the new Robin comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the Damian Wayne Robin, the little... the little piece of shit Robin.
Written by Joshua Williamson, who's done a bunch of stuff, and art by Gleb Melnikov, which sounds like a made-up name, but is not.
It has a premise that's very timely for those for the Mortal Kombat times we're living in, the remake times.
Yep.
But it's better than Mortal Kombat by far.
Yep.
And so yeah, go ahead and see if y'all want to see what the premise is.
So Damien basically has dropped off the grid, and it opens with like Batman looking for him, and then them all saying that, you know, that we'll find him. But basically, he has gone off the grid. He's got a new costume that is super cool looking.
It is cool.
It's all black and gray and has a hood.
Yeah, but it still has a Robin-y look to it for sure.
Yeah. Yep.
And
but it's a look for an edgy shitbird Robin.
Yep.
So he is going to... He's trying to enter the League of Lazarus tournament with a bunch of big martial artists. And to get in there, he defeats a well-known Robin adversary who's supposed to be a... dangerous man. I thought that was a really cool thing.
And by the way, the League of Lazarus tournament thing is... The Lazarus tournament is not something that's been around before. This is like an original concept that they just kind of introduced, but is apparently, you know, is now kind of being retconned and built into the Lazarus Pits mythology. But I am always for the Enter the Dragon tropes.
Yep.
I like big martial arts tournaments with dramatic stories weaving in and around them, and it looks like they are just rolling with it.
So we know from, I think, the DC Infinite Frontier that Connor Hawke is here.
Who I really like. I like Connor Hawke, but he hasn't been around in DC for like a decade.
And then Deathstroke's daughter, what's her name?
Rose. Were you about to say something?
The Plunderer. Oh. Didn't she call her Plunderer or something now?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I was going to say that if you, like me, exclusively relate things to 90s anime and cartoons,
yes.
This book is The Dark Tournament from Yu Yu Hakusho. Like, okay. That's literally what it is. Like,
okay.
It's a bunch of underground badass, possibly villains, beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, I've not seen Yu Yu Hakusho, but I am aware of its existence.
If you're a sucker for big fighting tournaments, you should definitely
watch. I heard it's good.
The Dark Tournament.
I take it back. I've seen a couple episodes of it, and it was good.
I really like this. Their take on Damien is great.
Yeah.
There's some nods. There's a few nods to Chuck Dixon's Robin run, which I think is really good. There's some characters in there from Chuck Dixon's run. It is it's a fantastic first issue.
Like several of the books lately, like for instance, like the Joker one, I can't say I was particularly looking forward to this.
No.
Damian Wayne just fine now, but I don't seek out his stuff with him in it particularly. And here it comes along, and it's like one of my favorite books of the week.
Yeah, agreed.
Like the Joker thing.
Similarly, I do just want to say that like I'm like so pleased with like how many like new characters
with
and,
cool
like,
designs,
really refreshing designs, like. The character that they introduce at the end of this, who is, like, Damien's opponent for the final fight, she's so fucking cool.
She got a dope look.
Like, she has a really cool look. I mean, like, I'm a sucker for a girl in a leather jacket, but, like, I mean, gosh, it's just a neat design, and it's, like, really refreshing to see, like...
I was going to say, hopefully she's not just there to get knocked out by him.
Yeah, well, it doesn't seem,
doesn't
like,
seem
it
like it
from the way the issue ends, but I didn't want to spoil that. But, like, it's so refreshing to see, like, new characters sort of, like, enter the mythos instead of, like, we're going to throw some random, like, C-list villain to, you know, do something dumb and get the crap kicked out of him. And,
yep.
Tinian's been introducing a lot of new villains, too. But, you know, I'm down for this idea. Come up with some cool new concepts. Let some fresher young artists come up with cool designs.
I mean, like, it's not like the older stuff has to go away, and it shouldn't go away. Like, that's the point of, like, big expanded, like, shared universe stuff. But, like, it is nice to see some new blood.
Yeah.
Like, give, like, just a refreshing little breather to the Riddler or whatever.
I mentioned when I was a kid and, like, they invented the New Mutants, which was the first new... book of second X-Men book that ever existed, or Alpha Flight, and became launched at the time, and those kind of like were my heroes. So some of them had existed a little bit before then, but most of them were kind of like getting their start in those things. And it's every new generation needs some new heroes and villains and all that stuff. So
so there's also Marvel has a new book this week, The Marvels.
Which is a Kurt Busiek book.
Yeah.
Is he actually writing it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So, and the artist is Yildiray Senar, who I think had done some Iron Man stuff. This is a sort of big, sweeping book about sort of Marvel history. The motto is anyone, anywhere, anytime. They're doing a big story that jumps from French Indochina in 1947 to modern day, jumps around a little bit, and basically sees Captain America facing off with an old foe. There's a new character introduced who's sort of a tour guide for like superhero Manhattan.
Yeah, it's like when you see the homes of the stars in Hollywood.
But
kind of thing.
Does a superhero tour.
That's kind of adorable.
Yeah,
and he has like a graffitied up flying bathtub from the Fantastic Four that he uses.
The old ship of theirs.
So it's fun. I'm not quite sure where they're going with it. It's a kind of a sprawling first issue. There's a lot going on.
It's really dense.
But yeah, for those who like Astro City or even like the Marvel snapshots
or just Busiek peeps in general,
or like Busiek, yeah, you might want to give that a shot. Image has a new book, Summoner's War Legacy, by Justin Jordan. This is a tie-in to a mobile video game with apparently a huge fan base.
Yep,
and it's not an all-ages fantasy book, it seems like.
Yeah, the art in it is like super, super gorgeous.
Yeah,
I'm a big fan of the designs and stuff.
There's actually a big fantasy week. There's also Helm Greycastle, which is a new sort of D&D by way of a Latinx creator, and a little bit more like Aztec riffs in it.
Yeah.
Like there's literal Montezuma and a bunch of like Aztec gods sort of like in Avatar type positions.
Yeah.
But you were telling me and like some of the stuff in it reminded me of what I remember from like the Pathfinder comic, which was there's kind of some casually progressive stuff in there that I thought was pretty cool.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought was super fun is like there's the main guy, he's like a big barbarian dude, and his wife is like this badass orc. So they're like a badass like barbarian battle couple, and they've got like a bunch of little gremlin kids. And then similarly, there's like a grumpy, pissed off dwarf who, for like the first chunk of the book, as they're doing their like little adventure, he's like crashing through stuff, and he's like being real
the
brash.
The Leroy Jenkins.
Yeah, he's like being real brash and mean, which is super funny because it's like, oh, that's just what a dwarf does. But then like they get back to their base, and as it turns out, it's his husband has like been poisoned, and they were trying to get the antidote.
Yeah,
and that was why he was like being such a jerk.
Yeah, it's got a full on adventure in the back for D&D 5e, which is
That's interesting.
Which I thought was like just such a neat little thing because like
I always like that.
The
stuff.
Idea of having a sort of like that like fantasy centered around that stuff, it's very rarely seen, I think, in fantasy, which most of which is, like, either Eurocentric or focused on, like, East Asia.
Back in the D&D 2nd Edition, they dabbled in it with one of their settings, Maztica, think. They're Central, South American kind of pre-Columbian
it's
mythology.
Part of the Forgotten Realms.
Yeah, that's right. It actually does exist along with, like, Drizzt could go there.
Yeah, he could.
Yeah. But he cannot because the Mighty Hero Jaguar Paw would beat his ass.
True.
That's true.
There's also a new Cyberpunk miniseries, Cyberpunk 2077, You Have My Word. And did you get a chance to read this?
I did.
I liked it.
I didn't get a chance to read the whole thing because it was like I was reading it right before I came in here.
I like mobsters with codes of honor. And it seems like the Valentino's gang in it are those people. And
I quite liked it.
Oh, cool.
The art was like super hot in that.
The art is really good. It's very like I don't know. It's
like realistic, but like it is like
it's still cartoony and like very brightly colored.
Yeah, it's got like, kind of a like this sort of like it's a little like that kind of acid punk look of the
exactly.
That you want in a cyberpunk thing with some garish colors, but I don't mean like garish in a like negative way. It's garish in a cool way.
Yeah, it's comfortably garish.
Yeah, that's it's the life I've been trying to lead. You get some backstory on one of the operatives this gang hires because they're dealing with some like skeevy politicians manipulations, and they are trying to push back against it, and they're hiring some like hacker types and agents and stuff. And one of them you see. You get a decent bit of her backstory and her family's, I think basically anybody trying the game or anybody who's just looking for because there's not a ton of cyberpunk comics.
There's not.
There's just things that dabble in it. You know, there's like little bits and pieces. This one is straight up cyberpunk.
Yeah, it's like hard
cyberpunk. Yeah, and so folks should check that out.
DC also produces Ruby Justice League, which is a follow-up to Marguerite Bennett's Ruby, which actually does really well in trade paperback.
Yeah, that's
she
that. Like,
also writing this.
She's also writing this.
That's that anime from Rooster Teeth. That's big, and now as lens through the eyes of the Justice League.
Yep. Miles Morales Spider-Man number 25 comes out. This is the start of the Miles Morales clone saga. It's interesting. It guest stars Peter Parker. They're doing some like alternate Miles or like.
Do people want another clone saga? That's just a question I need to go ahead and.
Everybody feels like they have to do their version. Like Dan Slott did one too. Someone has to keep doing it until they get like the perfect one. Apparently, they're cloning the clone saga.
Maybe the clone of Spider-Man Noir will be the one.
Here's what I'll say:
Spider-Man.
This is definitely better than the original clone saga.
Well, you know, the original one was like in the 70s, and then it was actually the 90s was not. It was like the sprawling one.
It's better than both of those.
Well, that bodes well.
But anyway, yeah, if you want a jumping on for Miles Morales, this is a good one.
By the way, even the 90s one, which I know like got, you know, became buried in its excesses, was known to have good stuff in it.
Yep.
And people still like Ben Reilly and all those guys.
Yeah. So Marvel's been doing these variant covers. They a lot of those actually. Every so often. They will collect them all into a little comic-sized booklet. And this week they did Star Wars The Empire Strikes Back covers, all the covers by Chris Sprouse.
Good artist who I haven't seen a ton from, but maybe that's just because I wasn't looking.
That he has done for the last, like, I don't know, 2 years with the Star Wars comics.
Yeah.
So they're all, like, vignettes from Empire Strikes Back as realized by Chris Sprouse.
I've liked that guy from way back, like, well, even a little bit before he was doing Legion of Superheroes in the 90s.
Yeah. But this is cool. Like, I think he does a good job of.
They're really good.
He's not just redoing moments. Like, he's capturing the feel of the moments, but he's not just, like, photo drawing them or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think most people know him as the artist of Tom Strong, right? Back in Alan Moore was doing that.
What's interesting is if you look through it it almost is like a silent storytelling book. Because he's doing the moments in order.
Oh. Yeah.
So you get, like, the first page of the probe droid, then you get Luke on the Tauntaun.
It's like a
tapestry.
Then
Luke in the Wampus Cave. And it is basically... Remember that Claws book that was, like...
It was all splash pages.
Yeah.
It was told as, like, yeah, series.
That's what this is. These covers basically become a story. They tell you the story of Empire Strikes Back. That's kind of clever. I hadn't noticed that.
Yeah.
Very
clever.
Kind of a fun little Star Wars thing.
Yeah.
That's all the jumping on points, but... I also want to mention there are some graphic novels this week. Reckless Friend of the Devil, which is the second volume in the Reckless series from Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips.
Yep,
you're
his...
like cranking these out, too.
The last one came out pretty recently? Yeah, I mean, it's like 6 or 8 months. It's been a while.
Yeah, what's funny is, like, it's not like...
Don't remind me of time dilation.
Like, you know, some people, when they do things like on a tight schedule, you notice the drop in quality. Sean Phillips and Ed Brubaker are not those people.
No, they're amazing.
They've probably been at it for a while.
This one takes place in the 80s, deals with Satanic Panic stuff. And
stuff dealing with Satanic Panic
lately. It was pretty big in the 80s.
Yeah, but it's
also in the
90s,
also in the 70s.
People are nostalgic for Satanic Panic.
Me too,
let me
honestly.
Just say that sort of... hysterical pseudoscience seems to be able to hold on in every era.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I feel like there could be some things, anti-vaxxers, that are still going on.
Cough, anyway, this
is another great adventure of Reckless. The sort of like, what's he called? Jack Reacher type PI, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got like a very fascinatingly specific history of having been like, gone undercover for the FBI in like sort of radical left-wing groups, formed sympathies with them, but then also there was like an explosion where he got some nerve damage from it, and it causes him to have this kind of like lack of empathy, or kind of like he's emotionally distant as a result of it. He operates out of this old vintage movie theater. Like, there's all these kind of interesting things that intersect with his life and just make him, like, every scene with him kind of percolate with interesting stuff.
And then Brubaker and Phillips wrap an interesting done in one mystery in each one.
Yeah.
So I thought you rap as in R.A.P.
No.
Like,
that's
his boxing and
secondary
like
career.
They might. That might be, I don't know how the process works.
Is that what they do, like, when they're doing the storyboarding?
Yeah, they may be just rapping.
Yeah. That's really cool. Ed Brubaker's so great.
Did you have some other graphic novels?
So, Hack Slash gets a hardcover for the first time ever.
Finally.
That's Tim Seeley, what's Tim been?
He does a ton of stuff. But I mean, he's like Cullen Bunn. He's very prolific.
Right.
But this,
Hack Slash was what put him on the radar for us.
Yeah, and artist Stefano Caselli, who has gone on to success at Marvel.
And
yeah.
We used to talk about it all the time, but if people haven't seen it, it's if you imagine that Buffy, instead of taking on vampires, was going after specifically like movie-type slashers.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Freddy Krueger, Jason, and all that. And in fact, her right-hand man, it's almost like a reformed Jason.
Yeah. And her mom was one of these slashers, and that's how she got into the biz.
Yeah.
And
it's a cool, like, slightly edgier, Buffy-ish...
And she's a goth chick with a baseball bat.
So. She is. Yeah. And also an adorable lesbian.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Who finds that out over the course of time, because she's almost, like, asexual early on, mm-hmm. and frustrated.
Yeah.
And there's actually, like, a very sweet through line on that. Yeah. It's really nicely written.
It's a great series. I'm glad to see it get the hardcover treatment. It's one I've been a fan of for a while.
Now that I think about it, it is a lot like Buffy.
Yeah, it is a lot like Buffy.
Yeah. But it's delightful.
And also, it's another Tom Taylor Tuesday.
Tom Taylor Tuesday.
Because we have the second printing of the first part of his Nightwing story, which we're all digging.
Yep.
And then there are three hardcovers from DC this week, and they are all written by Tom Taylor.
Right, it's his Hellblazer Rise and Fall, I think?
Yeah, his three-issue miniseries that he did with Derek Robertson.
Yeah.
His the entirety of his Suicide Squad run,
which is amazing.
Yeah, so it's like a nice 12-issue hardcover.
And then the latest Deceased Dead Planet, when Deceased really had broken big, I think. This is
the third collection in the whole staff likes it, Deceased series.
Yeah,
I was going to say, I know nobody asked for my opinion personally, but you should definitely buy both of those hardcovers because they're incredible.
I mean, it's true. There's just no doubt about it.
Well, you and I bought both hardcovers this week.
I know, and if that should tell you something, it's that you should also do that.
That's the thing. It's like Robin. We all like Robin. You know how rare it is that all of us
like
the
same
thing?
When it happens, you have to buy whatever we say
it
is.
It's true.
Not only is it rare that we all like everything, usually it's Randy and I who are the reason we don't all like everything.
It's true. We're usually one of Sometimes it's Dave.
That's fair.
Sometimes Hater Dave emerges.
That's right. I'll knock down a project.
It's also Barbarian Week because Beta Ray Bill number 2 comes in and was great.
Yeah.
There's a full-on, like, Carl Potts-style breakaway diagram of Scuttlebutt.
Oh, which, neat.
That alone would have made me buy this. Like, it's super cool.
I love Daniel Warren Johnson's art. He's so good.
For those who don't know, Scuttlebutt is Beta Ray Bill's spaceship.
Yeah.
And possibly also his butler.
And possibly his butler.
His Scuttlebutler.
Berserker number 2 finally hits. That is the Keanu Reeves starring as an immortal warrior. So that is hitting this week. And then Conan joins, who now has a symbiote in the Marvel Universe, apparently, after King in Black.
Joins up
with Rhino to heist the bank, and they run afoul of Spider-Man, and Conan is none too impressed with Spider-Man.
So, am I to understand
incredible.
That Conan is not only working with the heroes?
he's a rogue. He doesn't understand the codes of, like, he's yelling, he's sort of going in at Spider-Man as they're fighting, he's like, you are defending the corrupt lords of this land.
Oh, man, that's so good.
Is Jerry Duggan writing
like,
that?
He's like, you wasted volunteering it as a sellsword to the corrupt gangsters who run this hungry and poor city. And I was like, it's
oh, my God.
Damn, like, Conan just got real.
That is a complete mischaracterization of what I do. At first he thinks Spidey gets his powers from his costume, so he tries to tear, so he tears the butt out of his costume. Yes, Jerry Duggan is writing it. If that last bit didn't reveal that. Yes.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
No, that's truly delightful.
It's a lot of fun. I've been really enjoying Savage Avengers. This was another great issue of it.
It's funny because if there was a series that I would have thought that you wouldn't have liked,
I know.
It would be that. But, like, consistently, I think that's been a book that you've enjoyed.
There's also a great reveal in here where Rhino charges into the bank and draws all the attention while Conan is supposed to go in the vault and take everything.
Yeah.
And he's like, actually, a lot of my heists have been like that. It's a distraction for somebody else to do it. Like, that's really good.
I love that.
Detective Comics, it continues the story of a sort of a rich family losing someone and what's going to end, and Batman being out on the... He is no longer as rich as he was, and he is on the outs of the police department. So I'm liking this new sort of grittier Gotham. I also love that it's got Dan Mora on art.
Oh yeah.
Is that Mariko Tamaki writing that?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
She also writes a backup story with the Huntress that I really liked.
That's awesome.
Teen Titans Academy number 2 continues to be good. Great art on that
Very
one,
Very delightful.
Harley Quinn number 2. Anna, I know you loved this.
I'm just such an enormous fan of this book.
Everything
about it is great.
You know, just quick jump back to Teen Titans. I know that people who watched the cartoon in the early 2000s and bonded with it, and that's a lot of kids.
Yeah.
That the mystery of the, was it Red X?
Yeah.
Was a big thing there, and there is a new one with a different reveal to be had ultimately.
Yep.
So if that is something that catches your interest, know that there is a Red X storyline going on right now.
Yeah. There's also number 2 of Silk, which was a really fun first issue.
Yeah.
Number 4 of MODOK Head Games, which wraps that up. And then for me, three of my favorite Image books come out this week: Crossover, Department of Truth, and the new book Shadecraft, which I really thought the second issue kicks into another gear. That is the people who did Skyward. It's also the guy who's the showrunner of Lucifer.
Oh, wow.
So it's great.
Fascinating.
That's everything on my stack. Did I miss anything?
Right, I have a quick question while Anna looks at her stack.
Oh, yeah.
Would I like Shadecraft? I haven't gotten around to it yet.
I think you should give it a shot.
What is the horror quotient on it?
It's not horror. There are like living shadows.
But it's not spooky.
It's not spooky spooky. It's more of a like, it's not an adventure book either. It's not scary.
That's all right. I'm going to give it a try.
I have a question. You said it's the showrunner of Lucifer, right?
Yeah.
How many times is Lucifer in it having a bisexual threesome?
None so far.
Is that a big thing on Lucifer?
Hmm?
Is that a big thing on Lucifer?
Yeah, he does it, like, all the time on that show.
Yeah.
So, how do they even keep it out of that?
Yeah. What is the rough premise? Because it seems like something I'd like.
So, I don't want to give too much away, but basically there's a girl who, her brother's been in a coma, and then she finds her brother is sort of shadow. Her brother now becomes her shadow. And is sort of like watching her life, and there are all these shadow beings that are like around her.
That seems like it could be a potentially fun, but also kind of dark and weird.
There's a big reveal at the end of two that sort of changes the premise again, and I'm loving it. Really good. I would say think Buffy-esque or Hackslash-esque. It's not horror, but it's got scary elements to it.
Huh.
It's character driven.
Neat.
I need to check it out.
That actually sounds like something I would like quite a bit.
Is that everything?
I think so.
Yeah, I think we touched on it.
That's everything for the week. I think we do not have time to go into the Nevers this week.
Talk about that and the new Mortal Kombat, I think.
Yes. I would be happy to talk about Mortal Kombat in brief.
You know what? I found some things that I have some nice things to say about it.
Oh, okay. All right.
I'll watch the last 50% of the movie.
Okay,
from the point that you turned it off.
I'll get the beginning, you get the second part, and we'll see if we can put together what the movie's about.
Yeah, I think that'd be pretty fun.
I bet it's about Mortal Kombat. And you know what? I'd be wrong.
You would be wrong?
Yeah.
So you're saying that in a movie called Mortal Kombat, nobody fights to the death?
Oh, I don't know about that.
They weirdly... Well, I don't want to spoil it.
They fight first blood?
There is a key element of Mortal Kombat that is not in the Mortal Kombat movie.
It's true.
And it's
weird.
Sick beats?
It is sick beats. There's two key elements that are missing.
There's two key elements.
Because they do not have the awesome techno sound.
Yeah.
That's...
Okay, the other thing is that they don't get to the actual tournament.
There's no
tournament. The tournament is not in the movie.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's weird.
It's crazy.
And there's a sort of... Shang Tsung is trying to kill everybody before the tournament. So there's training and there's other things, but the tournament does not occur.
Yeah,
spoilers.
It's a weird.
Oh, wow. What a weird decision.
I did not care for it.
Also, we also might talk about Shadow and Bone next week. I don't know if anybody's watching with me.
Yeah,
I want to
try the first episode of that. Yeah. When you said it was like a kind of a Russian-infused fantasy thing, and I've heard it's like a popular sort of YA fantasy series, but also I read somewhere that it was one of these that's like... showed up on one of those Time magazine list of 100 best books or fantasy books or something, and so it's like it's apparently pretty highly regarded, and not just a this is good for the little kids.
It's great. I'm 6 of 8 episodes in. It's one of my favorite things I've watched on TV this year.
So things that have it's not literally like Russian, but it kind of has that vibe,
has a Russian
of it
feel, or Russian names,
yeah,
that kind of stuff.
Do they have great coats, Randy?
There are great coats.
Do they have fuzzy hats?
There are fuzzy hats.
That's, so it's very Russian.
Aesthetically, I probably want to check this out.
Aesthetically, it is Russian.
Yeah.
All right. But that and more next week. That's it for this week. Until next time.
Yo,
Joe. Mortal Kombat! Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.